hoping that you understand. You ain't the man to tell you in demand. Just pray to God we keep you in the plan. You ain't the man to tell you in it.
Hey there, welcome to Time Out with Ty, episode 58. I'm here this time for a special edition of the podcast. 58 isn't a very special number, but this will still be a great one, like all of them, regardless. I've got with me James Hollis, who is the artist formerly known as at Snotty Drippin'. No longer. We're at J Hollis Hoops now. How's it going, James?
Let's give you a round of applause because you finally got my name right.
I bet I did get it wrong before.
We should throw a parade for you, man. I'm doing well. Thanks for asking, man. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, you're welcome. It's rare for me to get anyone's name right, especially someone who's currently on the podcast. So, yeah, I'm super excited about that. We're going to talk about six semi-random Eastern Conference teams I picked out earlier. But first, we're doing a little something different tonight. Today, as you're probably hearing this, maybe who knows, at some point when you listen to this, we're doing a special thing. We're doing a giveaway I hinted at a while ago when I introduced the Time Out with Ty merch line on TeePublic. Oh. Yeah. So anyone listening to this has a chance to win themselves a Time Out with Ty shirt shipped to your house, fully paid for, wherever you live. You can get a shirt. They're good shirts. I've had Coach Dave DeFore got a shirt. I think you've been on his podcast before.
I have. I'm wondering why I didn't get a shirt.
Well, he ordered a shirt.
I got more followers than him, so I should get one free.
You can enter the contest. You can enter the contest to try to win a shirt. To enter, all you have to do is tweet at me a screenshot of you listening to your favorite episode of Time Out with Ty. So wherever you listen to it on, SoundCloud, Stitcher, iTunes, I don't know where else, but I think it's on like podcast.com. I didn't put it there, but it's on there. I don't know if anyone listens to it there, but if you do, send me a screenshot of you listening to your favorite episode of the podcast of all time. This is 58 now, so you've got a lot to choose from. With the hashtag TWTVibes. That's just the hashtag I made up. I mean, I'll probably see it without the hashtag, but the hashtag makes it easier. So include the hashtag. I'll randomly pick someone who tweets it to win a t-shirt. It'll be good. I think James is going to enter like 40 times. It sounds like he wants a t-shirt. So good luck. Anyway, let's get to the show. I have six teams I picked out. The 76ers, the Bulls, the Celtics, the Hornets, the Raptors, and the Wizards. Let's just go in alphabetical order with the Philadelphia 76ers. I can say your name, but I can't say city names, apparently.
Philadelphia, right.
Philadelphia. Well, what do you got?
I was going to boycott the show, so I got a t-shirt, but I'm ready to roll. Let's do it.
Okay, good, good. I'm glad you're not boycotting in the middle of the episode. That's a solid start to not have a boycott. My first question on the Sixers here, how real is Joel Embiid? Everyone is freaking out about this dude. He's full of himself, but to be fair, he's putting up the numbers so far.
I think he's 106% authentic. He's real. These aren't sham numbers. He's doing it against, he's having his issues. Shooting percentage isn't great. A lot of turnovers. The guy doesn't pass the ball. I actually love that about him. I mean, hey, if you hadn't played for 2 years, either. I'm taking every shot I see too. In limited minutes, you know, he's only allowed to play 24 minutes a night or something.
Yeah.
So, but the game changing defender, like just today, they led Cleveland for most of the game. And he was a big part of that. He was blocking shots. He was rebounding. He was, he was making threes. The guy could do it all, man. I love his game and I love his personality. I love the fact that he plays to the crowd and like, you know, he's not scared to be himself. I love it.
I think my favorite Embiid moment was when he kicked the bench the other night when he had to come out. I think it was like overtime or double overtime, and he had already played over his minutes restrictions, and the Sixers training staff was basically like, yo, like you can't anymore. Like that restriction's there for a reason, and he got mad and kicked the bench and then sat down. It's like that's cool to see out of a player. If my franchise guy just like accepts having to sit down in a close game where they know that they can be the difference, I'd be a little disappointed if they were just like okay with it. Like I love his fire, like you said. He plays to the crowd. He knows he's great. He always has. He's living up to it. It's crazy. I mean, they're still not winning. Part of it is because, you know, he can only play 24 minutes a night. Part of it is because he's a rookie. Like he has a ton of turnovers right now. He'll get better. He's still very rough. What do they need to do to start winning, though? I mean, obviously, Ben Simmons is hurt. They have young players. They have too many centers. But they have a lot of three-point shooters. You think that would help them a little bit? They still just have not been able to close games. Is that just how they're going to be for a while?
That's how they're going to be for the next couple years. Like, look at the Timberwolves right now. People are stressing, like, what's wrong? More talent than Philly does by a long shot, and they're going to take some losses because young teams don't really play well. Philly's even further behind. They have less talent, especially with Ben Simmons out. So I think the only thing they need now is time. You got to just be patient. But the little kids outside, I don't know if you hear him yelling.
That's fine. Yeah, it adds a nice little flavor.
Right. Yeah, that's what the crowd's like when Embiid hits a three. That's how they go. So yeah, that's it. All it is they just need time, and I hope that the Philly front office understands that and doesn't pull what Orlando does. Like, Orlando's already kind of reset the timeline like three or four times in the last couple of years because they have this insane need to make the playoffs, even when they're not even close. So they're trying to like make all these silly little moves and bring in vets that don't really match. So I hope Philly just, you know, holds what they got and lets Embiid grow. They need to make a move, obviously, though. They do. I think Okafor is getting a bad rap, but he's really, really good. I just don't know if he's too good to be a backup. And, you know, especially in this situation here where, you know, he won Rookie of the Year and now they relegate him to the bench. That has to be hard on his psyche. So I think him and or Nerlens Noel will probably be on the move. But after that, though, I think they just need time.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. It's the same for the Timberwolves. I thought maybe they could get an eighth seed in the West, maybe. Just because, like you said, I mean, young teams just aren't good. Like, needing to learn how to win in the NBA is a very real thing. Like, you can be a very talented young team, but you just might not know how to win yet. I think
it's Do you hear that sound?
Yeah, I think I do.
That's me patting myself on the back because I told everybody that I didn't get the Timberwolves love. Well, I get the love because they have a great young talent, but that this whole thing about them making the playoffs this year I thought was really overblown because, again, I was like, they're just too young, and we've never seen Tibbs in a teaching situation. He stepped into a Chicago team that was fully formed. They are already a playoff team when he showed. Like, this is a whole different ballgame for him. It's a whole different thing from being a fun young team and being a winning team. And so I think it takes about a year or two for the Timberwolves too.
Yeah, I'm still not entirely sold on that hire. And we're not really doing Timberwolves today, but just like Tibbs is known like for two things. And when he's hired and recently, everyone's excited about the first thing, which is fantastic defense. And that's fair. I'm sure they will be a very good defensive team once he's been there for a while. The other thing is overplaying his guys. And these young guys are playing a lot of minutes. I don't like seeing Karl Anthony Towns play 40 minutes on a team that won't win 40 games. Like, it's very pointless to me. It's worrisome. I don't want to see these young guys get overworked. It's something I saw with Giannis and Chris Middleton last year. And it's just, like, not a good thing to see in young players, to see them play that much. It's not healthy going forward. That's why Luol Deng is, like, 32, but he plays like he's 40 because he's got worn out.
Right. Yeah, and it's funny because my man Brian Gelzer, Hoops Critic, love him, really smart basketball mind, but me and him we kind of tangled on the line because I made the comment. I just said, let's see if Tibbs can be a teacher. And he was like, well, he's one of the best coaches. You're crazy to doubt him. I said, I'm not doubting him. I'm just saying we've never seen him in this role. And this talk of the Timberwolves being a playoff team, it seems really, you know, short-sighted because we have no idea how he's going to perform yet and how these guys are going to grow. They're so young. I mean, that's too much pressure on them. And I think so far, I mean, we've seen it. Tibbs looks disgusted on the sidelines. We talk about players and their body language. Well, got to go over a coach too. And when these guys are blowing defensive assignments or they can't score in the third quarter, which has been their Timberwolves Achilles heels, his face is like, what am I, no, what's going on here? So we're not talking Timberwolves. You're right. It's just young. Philly's just young. And I love it. I love that they're growing together. They're actually giving teams challenges, not getting blown off the floor every night, just some nights now. So it's good. It's good. Yeah, it's good to see.
How do you feel about Brett Brown?
I think he's done a great job, and it's funny because I'm hearing talk of him being a bad coach, and you know they need to get a next level coach. Well, they're not at the next level. It doesn't matter. He's actually instilled a lot of good things. Like they believe in the pace and space. They're trying to get dunks and layups and avoid the long twos. Those guys have learned. Robert Covington has become an NBA player. Hollis Thompson has become an NBA player because they played under Brett Brown. He's instilled certain good things and he's kept the energy level up. Even when they were losing a lot, he's kept the spirits up. People were saying that, oh, all the losing is going to ruin these players. I don't see anybody being ruined. They all look like they're ready to go. So I think he deserves a shot with a real roster before we really judge him, because the team's been a train wreck the last couple of years. It's not his fault. So I'm 100% behind Brett Brown. I like what he brings to the team.
Yeah, I am too. I think the thing about it for me really is I haven't studied too much of like what he does, just because, I mean, like you said, he hasn't had real NBA teams. So like his record will always be ruined. Like that's just noisy, but that's something like people bring that up. Like, oh, it sucks that, you know, they killed his coaching record. How often does anyone really bring up a coaching record when talking about great coaches? I mean, Pop, obviously, because that's over decades now, but I feel like most of the time when you talk about coaches, it's like what they do with what they have and their strategies and philosophies, more than just wins and losses, because that's just such a basic metric to look at. But anyway,
for sure. And like Doc Rivers was presided over some terrible teams in Orlando. They had one good year when he made, you know, he won Coach of the Year, but he presided over some bad teams. You know what I mean? And it's weird because it's like, even if people say look at his record, well, everybody knows why they have that record. It's not like it's everybody knows the team was tanking for, you know, 3-4 years. So even down the road, oh, why is the record so bad? Everyone should be like,
you know why?
Yeah, have you know why? Basketball, bro. Yeah, exactly. So it's weird that it's even a comment with him.
Yeah, but the thing I really like about him though is that, I don't know if you listened, it was I want to say it was the Vertical Podcast with Woj. He had on Embiid and Brett Brown, and they talked about how when Embiid's little brother died, like the one he went to talk to right away was Brett Brown. Like Brett Brown's always been there for him. The reason he like might have ended up getting hurt the second time or whatever was because Brett Brown wanted to keep him around the team at first his rookie year, because he thought it would be easier for him. They ended up rethinking that for last season. But it's interesting that they're super, super close, and he's always like been there for Embiid. I think that kind of stuff is awesome. Like, I think that's what makes up good coaches. Like, it's like Monty Williams is that kind of guy, and I'm glad he's having success with the Spurs organization in the front office right now, I want to say. Like, those guys are important for players, even if they're not, you know, like Brad Stevens coming out of timeouts. Like, that stuff matters.
For sure. And that's my thing with, like, Scott Brooks. We're all going to say, well, he could have done this better, that better. Under his tutelage, he's made, like, you know, 3 Hall of Fame potential guys and 3 MVP quality guys, and you know, surge turned from a raw athlete to actual NBA player who's a borderline all-star. That matters, and establishing a culture matters. So if Brett Brown, if his job is just to spend a few years establishing that kind of culture and rapport and getting these players to that next level, that's fine. Then you want to move on for another coach. I can understand that. He doesn't seem to have the X and O down. But for his job right now, I think he's doing a great job.
Well, since we talked about Scott Brooks, let's just jump right to the Wizards and talk about Brooks some more. Let's just hop around. We've both been talking Wizard stuff. The one thing I want to say about Scott Brooks before we talk about the Wizards in general, that I don't think he gets enough credit for, is that like it seems to me that Russell Westbrook and Kevin Durant really were not fans of each other. And that wasn't – so I mean, it was like, you know, everyone had their jokes, like, you know, the meme of KD watching Westbrook shoot the deep three or whatever. But I don't think it was that talked about, and I feel like – Scotty Brooks probably deserves a lot of the credit for that, for sort of keeping these guys together. They never really had like a moment where you went, oh my God, these guys hate each other, until KD had already left. I think that's like, obviously, I mean, Billy Donovan was there for one of those years, but for a lot of them, it was Brooks. I think he probably played some sort of a role in that too. It's hard to speculate, but that's just how I feel about it, is that like, I don't know. It seems like right now, these two guys did not get along very well. And it's we never really knew about that too much.
Now, see, at the same time, though, like, you know, when Russell was under fire for shooting too much or whatever, or Mark Cuban called him an idiot or called him a not all-star, and KD called Cuban an idiot. Yes, I think there's something to that as far as I think that Brooks was a big part of establishing that, like, team-first culture. And he might even talk to those guys and realize he had two different personalities. But hey, for the good of the team, you guys got to mesh and you guys got to get along and put up a good front. That's possible, too. I also just think that, again, KD and Russ met, you know, when they were so young, and they just kind of grew apart. And as we see, Russ is kind of hard to play with, I'm pretty sure, for another star. So the fact that they won all the games they did, yes, that's a tribute to Scott Brooks. It's a double-edged sword, though, because I think he could have done better – in teaching Russ Westbrook what not to do a little more, and maybe giving him more rigid structure that would have helped probably form him. But once I think we're about 5 years in with the player, he is who he is. So it's too late now. But yeah, it's a double-edged sword. But I think the Brooks did a lot more good than bad in OKC.
Yeah, I mean, I think the wins speak to that. I mean, we've said wins don't indicate everything about a coach, but if you win that many games, it does mean you're doing something fairly right.
For sure.
He's not getting the wins with Washington. They're bad. They're, I think, 5-10 right now.
Oh, boy.
I have notes done for this podcast because I'm trying to be more professional now. My note is Wizards dash. Yes. Wizards,
you sucker.
Yeah, I know. Wizards dash, or Wizards not dash, sorry. Wizards colon train wreck. Why are they so bad? Is it just a lack of talent? I mean, Jan Mahinmi hasn't really played yet, but if Jan Mahinmi is supposedly the one who's going to save you from a horrible start, I don't know where you're at as a team.
I'm really thinking that the issue with the Wizards is it's almost like systemic. It's deep. It's deep rooted. And I want to say ever since the days of Deshaun Stevenson and those guys, they've never had a real fresh start in Washington. Even when they had like John Wall was the bridge between the old Wizards, the Arenas Wizards, and the new Wizard. And I think once he took over, it was known as his team. And, you know, he was a young guy and he was given the keys to a franchise and the team was bad, but they were trying. They're building. I really believe that once they made the all-out pitch to Kevin Durant and they started putting up billboards and the hashtag KD to DC became like a thing, and like even the franchise was part of that. I'm speaking totally speculatively. It feels like from everything where I've seen John Wall, he's a very prideful guy, and he's very much about being respected and his place in the NBA hierarchy. And you know, he talks about contracts and other players. Well, why does Reggie Jackson make as much as me? And he looks, you know, him. So I think that they might have really kind of – they might have pushed him off of – he might feel, like, disrespected by the franchise. And hard, and his numbers look all right. I really think that there's real issues with him and Bradley Beal. I'm not saying they're, like, they're franchise-breaking issues, but there's some issue between him and Bradley Beal. And then the fact that, again, like, he felt probably kind of disrespected when they're – I think he made a comment, like, hey, KD has a billboard. I've never had a billboard here. You know, that kind of thing sticks with players, and there just seems to be a cloud around that team. And even though they're supposed to start fresh this year, I was really high on them coming into the season. They just don't seem. Yeah, there's just it. Scott Brooks is, I think, he's a great players coach. But if there's something already so deep rooted, I don't know if he's the guy, and I don't know if any coach could really come in and change that culture.
Yeah, I mean, I think hiring Brooks to try to do it was a smart idea, but it might be too little, too late. I think underappreciated might be a better word for how Wall feels.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't really think about the KD to DC thing impacting Wall, but I think there might be something to that just based on how he is. And I think underappreciated because like they did the big run for KD, which if it was just that, I feel like Wall, he's a smart guy. He'd be like, all right, I can't. I mean, it's Kevin Durant. Like, I can see why they really want Kevin Durant. He's fantastic. But then at the same time, it's like after he complains about Reggie Jackson making more than him, The team hands $130 million to Brad Beal, who's just not been as good as Wall. I mean, it's not close. He's not as good as John Wall. He's younger. He might be able to get there, but he's been injury prone, and he hasn't won that much with John Wall since their nice season 2 years ago now.
I'm going to say this. We can discuss this on another podcast. I'm going to disagree when you say he's nowhere close as good as John Wall.
You think he's better?
I'm not saying that, but I'm going to disagree when you say he's nowhere close. I think it's a different kind of we grade him differently because it's a point guard and a wing. But I also think wings can intrinsically affect the game more. And if you look at their win-loss record without each other, you'll be surprised that Beal has won almost as much without Wall, because even though it's a small sample size, as far as percentage-wise, as he has with Wall. So I'm going to disagree when you say that Beal's nowhere near as close.
I just feel like there's more of a difference between point guards and wing players. Like, I don't think there's many players who can do what John Wall can do. I feel like you could find a couple guys at shooting guard who can do what Beal can do. Like, I think his skill set is easier to replicate than Wall's. And you can probably do it for less.
But here's the thing. If you have John Wall as your best player and you have an average roster, what does that really mean? I feel that a wing, as far as like a Bradley Beal type with his shooting and playmaking and scoring, because he's not a bad playmaker at all. He actually is a very decent playmaker if you look at his numbers. I think they can affect wins and losses and are easier and better to build around than a point guard. And this has been a long-standing discussion that debate I've been having online and with people. So that's another good podcast idea, and I'd love to hop on and talk about that too. But I think, yeah, having a wing who can do a lot of things, even if they're not, quote-unquote, as good as John Wall, is still better for a team as far as who you're going to build around.
Do you think he's worth the contract?
Again, it's like Mike Conley. Mike Conley's not worth $150 million, but for his team, because no one's going to go to Memphis, and you know they're paying. It is what it is. Market value, even the small market bump. Sure. So with Bradley Beal, I mean, hey, you let him. Who's going to come? No way. You have no guarantee anybody else is going to come to replace him, even with the full contract. So you kind of got to pay him. So is he worth it? I mean, I want to say no, because he hasn't really proven anything. He's always hurt. But I see why they had to kind of pay him.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think they should have. I think there's like a little bit. I have a little bit of a disconnect. Like, I just think it's easy to say that, and it's sort of true. I don't know. I mean, I feel like cap space is going to become valuable again soon, because a lot of these huge deals are being signed and the cap is going to level off fairly soon. Like, if you look around the NBA right now, a lot of teams are paying a lot of money to guys who aren't super, super good. And,
oh, yeah.
And I know I'm not one of these, you know, old crotchety people. Like, why is this guy making $10 million? Like, it's fine. Go get your money. I don't have a problem with that. But I think that, like, last summer, cap space was worth nothing, like, going into this free agency, because everyone had it. I think now that we've seen the jump, it's going to become valuable again, because, like, Miles Plumlee got $50 million, Evan Turner got $70 million, Alan Crabb got $50 million, Tyler Johnson got $50 million, just, like, deals like that. Like, suddenly, like, Portland had the most space, and now they have the most guaranteed money on their books. Like, stuff like that is happening, and teams need room to make moves. So if you have a lot of cap space, that's almost like an asset in itself. I just feel like the flexibility, and, you know, they're not going to sign a marquee free agent. The Wizards aren't. They're just not. I mean, clearly they didn't even get a meeting with Kevin Durant, but they could get, right. They could get somebody. I mean, if you pitch a guy, but, and
as, I mean, I guess the thing about there is you're rolling the dice on, we need space to hopefully sign somebody. It's almost like the bird in the hand is worth two in the bush. Right. So yeah. You're saying, hey, let Bill, and I would almost get it, but then think about it. They're so much worse this year, right? So they're basically tanking if they don't have Bill. Say what you want about him. He's a valuable player. He can play ball. Then you're putting more stress on John Wall to do it all himself. And so you get a draft pick, and you still have this cap space. And then what? I mean, if somebody doesn't sign, then what are you going to do? Like, again, like you said, yeah, it's valuable, and a lot of teams ate up their cap space, but there's still not a guarantee that guys want to come play with John Wall, which is weird because he's such a good player and a great point guard. You would think scorers will maybe kind of want to come play with him, but we haven't seen that. You know what I mean? So that's neither here nor there. I think their issues, again, their defense let them down. I know Brooks is trying to maybe implement a better offense, and we see flashes, but for the most part, they struggle scoring. They struggle having a – It's a mess. It's really a mess there. And I think it's less X's and O's and less Scott Brooks and more just chemistry. I think sometimes we undervalue how much chemistry matters. And I think we're seeing with Washington, chemistry matters a lot. And they were losing bad the other night. And I saw on the the end of the game, Wall and Beal were sitting there looking in different directions, kind of really disinterested, you know, towels over their mouth. Like, they probably talked back and forth. And I get it. It's an early season game. It's not, you know, you can't really draw conclusions off that. I just, you know, body language is one of those things we try to read, and we probably shouldn't because we're just fans and both. But their body language just looks terrible.
Yeah, I mean, I think, and there's been quotes that they themselves have said, like, sometimes we hate each other on the court. Like, what? Like, yeah. why would you ever, I mean, if it's true, I guess, why not say it? But, and I think the thing about it is, like, teammates, it's hard to win if you don't get along. But if you're either transcendent talents or you play sort of far away from each other, like Kobe Shaq, basically, or Kobe Dwight, or Kobe and a lot of people. It's easy to get over. But if you're a backcourt and your team relies on your backcourt, I think you need to get along, because it's harder to share the ball, like Wall basically alluded with that quote. It's harder to share the ball between two guards, especially if they can both sort of ball handle, if there's like a little bit of divisiveness there. Like if you want to succeed more than you want your teammates to succeed, it can throw off your chemistry and it can throw off your performance. I think that's why Lowry and DeRozan are so good, and like Steph and Clay. Like when Clay had his 37-point quarter, Steph Curry was very excited for him. You know, when DeRozan's recent success and contract, you know, Kyle Lowry wasn't out here like, I'm so mad DeRozan got this money. He joked. He's like, you're buying dinner every night now. Like those guys get along really well on and off the floor. And I think that's translated to success for their teams.
Right. And then Wall had a comment. I want to say it was after it must have been after a win. I think Beal played pretty well. And he said something like, well, yeah, you know, he needs to start earning that money. You know, it's really just rough.
That's a rough thing to say.
I think Wall probably just needs a fresh start. So I think he's like Boogie to me. I think as talented as he is, he has his own flaws. I don't think he's that guy you can throw a franchise on his shoulders. I think he probably needs a fresh start. Yeah.
Someone was telling me, I think they heard it on like Zach Lowe post. I still haven't heard the newest one yet. But apparently they're talking about the prospect of him going to New York to play with Porzingis.
Yeah, whatever.
You don't like it?
I wouldn't mind it as much. But again, his personality is what kind of bothers me. I wouldn't – and it seems like a very Knicks move, and I think it'd probably work out in the short term. I just don't know, man, because Porzingis is the man there. And Wall wants to be the man wherever he goes, I feel like. So maybe I'm just reading him totally wrong. I think it'd be a good fit, talent-wise, sure.
So it'll be interesting to see if he does get moved or force the Wizards to move him, or if they just move him anyway. It'll be interesting to see, because like almost anywhere he would go would have some like their version of a star, right? Like he's not going to Brooklyn. He's going to go somewhere where there's like one player established already. It'll be interesting to see if he, you know, stays saying the things he says now, or if he sort of goes for more of a, you know, we can team up and take this league on. Like, that's what you need. And if I hope we see that from him. Even if he doesn't move, I hope we see that from him with Beal, just because I always, you know, you want to root for guys. But if he does get moved, I hope we don't see a power struggle. Now, those are ugly and stupid, mostly.
Well, the big thing, though, is like you said earlier, it's harder when there's two they're both backcourt guys, so let's hope if it happens that he moves somewhere where, you know, he's a point guard, he's playing with a big, or he's playing with a small forward who needs the ball and not really a creator or something. So it's interesting, and it'll be interesting to see.
Yeah, they don't have the assets, but it'd be fun to watch him on the Kings, honestly. Him with Boogie, and they have a lot of shooters. Like I wrote about this. I actually like I low key like the Kings. They need to get rid of Kostas Koufos ASAP. But they have a lot of shooters. They have a fun team.
See, no, the listeners can't see my face right now, but I know you can.
And yeah, he shot me a stink face. They have, when they play Cousins without Koufos, they're a plus team in net rating. And when they play, like I think it's like Rudy Gay, he's in the middle of a heat check. He won't be this good for too long, but he can be good. But it's like Rudy Gay, Garrett Temple, and Boogie. They're like plus 12 per 100 possessions or something ridiculous. Like they have lineups that are good. They just keep playing too many big guys because they have like 12 centers or something. But anyway, well, Sacramento's whole other. We'll have to do a Western Conference pod at some point to get to Sacramento.
I'm down. Let me know. Yeah,
I will.
I think Sacramento's a lot like the Wizards, where they just need maybe a complete overhaul because that new owner came in and things have been just as bad as the old owner. So that's a whole different thing. So, yeah, go ahead. Yeah.
Two backcourt guys that have been getting along weirdly well, despite what everyone thought is – well, not everyone, but I feel like most people. Dwayne Wade and Jimmy Butler. The Bulls are good. They have Rondo too, which is like why. I don't know why, but – Dwayne Wade, Jimmy Butler, both been fantastic. Not sure if it's sustainable that Butler's shooting 42.6% from three and Wade shooting 38.5%.
It's not.
But they're winning and they're playing really well together. And I think the important thing with that is, although he's a verified legend, Dwayne Wade, when he came to Chicago, he insisted it was still Jimmy Butler's team, and I think that's done wonders for the Bulls' chemistry, and that's why they're in the big logjam for second place in the East right now.
So, Jimmy Butler is the second best player in the East. That's hands down.
You know what? I don't think I can disagree.
You can't. Right now, he is. I mean, he's almost – he's sublime.
Giannis is number one, right?
No, that's still LeBron. Giannis's numbers are awesome, but he still has a ways to go. And he's that young colt that's just learning how to – he's going to have to learn how to rein it in sooner or later. But, yeah, Jimmy Butler is definitely, I think, this, and he's actually playing almost like the best player. Like, look, his last seven games, he's averaging a hair under 30 points a game, 8 rebounds, 5 assists. He's getting you a steal, and he's shooting 40% from three, 50% from the field. The guy is – I mean, the best thing about it is not turning the ball over. He's turning over less than 2 times a game with such a high usage and all these shots and minutes. He's been incredible. Dwayne Wade, I think, has been a nice Robin to his Batman. The turd in that punch for me is always going to be Rondo. And that was, I said, all.
How does this guy keep getting these? Do no front offices know about on off numbers?
They don't. I bet someone in that front office knows. Hey guys, I don't know. And somebody else says, but he's a gamer. He's a winner. He in crunch time, he gets it done. He just knows how to play. He makes guys around him better. And matter what, somebody got shouted down.
Remember when he was the fourth best player on that title team 5 years ago? Yeah, because that means a ton.
Yeah, five. Just back it up a little more, right? That was 2000.
Oh, yeah, that was 2008, wasn't it?
Yeah. Oh, so we're talking
8 years ago.
Yeah. And ever since he got hurt, right, he hasn't been the same kind of athlete, and it shows. He's been a net negative on the court since 2012.
Yeah.
And plus minus can be a little deceiving, of course, and there's always reasons and context and nuance with all that. But just the fact that every single year, even up till right now, the teams have performed better per 100 possessions when he sat than when he played. So, I mean, that means something eventually. Somebody's going to finally catch on and be like, all right, let's stop giving this guy a job.
I mean, this is an interesting conversation, and it's one we have time for because we've been doing real well on time so far. Like, can you win without a point guard who can shoot in 2016? There's not too many left, and the ones that are around – I mean, Ricky Rubio has great on-off numbers, but his teams haven't won too much. And then there's Rondo, who has horrible on-off numbers. I mean, that's if there's only two of them, they have a lot of differences, obviously. But if
there's one outlier in all that.
What's that?
Russell Westbrook.
Russell Westbrook can't shoot
a lick. But the thing to me that makes him different is that he still can score.
Yeah,
he gets to the free throw line and. He can get to the rim like no other, and he does it in a way that it's funny. I always say this: it's hard to win. Is your best player and is your dominant player unless he can do things and perform like a wing does. Like Steph Curry provides that kind of shooting that you would want from a high, 30 points a game, hits threes from anywhere. That's like if you had a two guard who could do that, you're fine. Russell Westbrook gets to the rim at will and rebounds like a madman and disrupts whatever you want to do. No matter what you try to do defensively, he's going to disrupt it. And if you had a two guard that could do that, you're fine.
So basically what you're saying is it's not about, strictly shooting. It's about versatility.
It's about bringing something else to the table. Like, like being a game breaker. Steph Curry has game breaking shooting. Russ has game breaking speed. That's what kind of worries me about Chris Paul. Is as talented and skilled as he is, when things really get tough and like the defense locks in game 5 and 6 and 7 of a playoff series, he doesn't have a game breaker. He has nothing he can do that takes him to that next level. He's kind of maxed out all the time already. That's how I am with Rondo. Sure, when the game doesn't matter and you're in December and January, he's racking up these great assist numbers. It looks great, but he has nothing. He has no game breaking skill anymore. He can't finish. He's not a scorer. He's not a great defender. There's nothing he can really bring to the table.
Yeah, which is – it's incredible that the Bulls are still, I think, 10-6 right now. With him starting. Like, they've still been very good just because I think you're right. Jimmy Butler's just been fantastic. Are we worried about this team in the playoffs? This feels like a team – imagine like just somehow mythically Rondo's not there anymore, which I think he will be. But, like, just the fact that they have Butler who's been – a legit guy in the playoffs, Wade, who obviously has some postseason experience. Like, they have a lot of experience on this roster. It's not crazy deep, but they have enough good players, I feel like, to make a run. I don't think they're going to beat Cleveland, but I think they could be dangerous.
Well, here's the thing. What we were talking about earlier about his on-off numbers. So, off the court, their offense operates at 109 points per 100 possessions.
This is Rondo? Right?
This is Rondo.
Yeah.
When he's not on the court, he's on the bench, they still put up 109 points per 100, which is awesome. Their offensive rating of 109 is still really good.
Yeah, that's with him near the top.
Oh, yeah, definitely. But with him, they're at 113. So he had like 4 points, per 100 possessions. That's good.
Yeah.
Their defense with him on the court is 111, almost 112 points per 100 possessions. So that's the D rating. Without him, it's 98.
Oh, wow.
So he craters that team's defense by himself. You know what I'm saying? It's like there's plenty of minutes. It's not like a small sample size thing. There's plenty of minutes with him and without him right now. So it's almost, they played almost 400 minutes with him and 322 minutes without him on the court. So it's I still don't know if this team's legit. I like their start. I'm really slow to, especially in a case like this where the results are so surprising. It's hard for me to just go 180 on what I thought in the offseason. So I'm going to wait till about January to see how authentic I think they are, because I think they might hit a swoon here soon.
That's certainly fair. It's very conflicting for me, a Milwaukee guy, to watch the Bulls because they're a Chicago team and I just want to hate them. But Butler and Wade are both Marquette guys. So it's like, damn, it's kind of nice to watch them do well. So I would not mind if the Bulls stayed good, especially because the Bucks aren't going to be a factor this year anyway.
Well, I'm human, so I want them not be good because I kept projecting them not to be good.
I did so too. I'm taking a huge L on them. I didn't think Jimmy could play small forward this well. He's proved me so wrong.
I had a feeling Jimmy would be fine, but I thought Rondo would just kind of muck it all up and it'd be terrible with him on the court. And it's just bad with him on the court, but he's not stopping them from winning. So we'll see. We'll see. I'm still not a believer in them yet.
Yeah, if it wasn't for Rondo, I feel like I'd be really excited about these guys, but he's there. Let's go to your team, the Boston Celtics. I feel like a lot of people are kind of down on Boston because they had a slow start. Let's look at a quick number here, very basic stat. 5-2 with Al Horford. That's a good percentage. That's a good winning percentage. That's the difference. I was talking about the Celtics on a podcast with Adam McGee, and I was like, well, yeah, they haven't been rebounding that well. It's probably, the Horford thing. And he's like, yeah, Horford hasn't even really played that much. You gotta take a deeper look there. Come on, man. They're good. They're going to be good. Jaylen Brown's coming along pretty quick. He's not as great as maybe a couple people thought early on. He looked really fantastic. His numbers dipped a little bit, but that's rookie wall stuff. He's going to be a real player. Isaiah Thomas is just going apeshit every night, which is like not people aren't talking about this enough. Like, isn't he scoring like 30 points a game right now?
Yeah, he's up there, 28, 29.
I know you don't believe in IT, but still, like, the numbers there are impressive.
Well, check this out. Last four games, Boston's 3-1. He's averaging 25-6, right? Shooting decently. Well, he's only shooting 40% from the floor, but he's a volume shooter. That's what he's going to do sometimes.
Yeah.
He's a net negative. He's a net negative.
Really?
Not much. Yeah, net negative 0.3. It's great. And this is why I said there's space for volume scorers in the league, even if one who's not is particularly efficient. Look at DeMar DeRozan. And IT is Isaiah Thomas is DeRozan. The numbers look great. He's not necessarily always a plus. He can be pretty inefficient. He's not a good defender. But having somebody who can go out there and slap up 30 points. Because, I mean, the point of the game is score more than the guy across from you, right?
Yeah.
If he can get done in the flow of the offense and give you 30, that lets everybody else do what they do well, defend, spot up for threes, whatever. So I have no problem with how he plays. I'm just saying, again, like, you know it. I'm not that high on him, and I'm really interested to see what they're going to do in the summer 2018 when he's demanding all this money. But for right now, the guy's playing out of his mind. He's one of the best. I say he's probably one of the best four scorers in the league as far as just pure scoring. Even at his size. So he does his job well. You said it right. I had no worries about Boston at all. I heard all the people talking, what's wrong with Boston? Maybe we'll – no, Al Horford wasn't playing. And, hey, Crowder wasn't playing.
Yeah, Crowder's beat up too, yeah.
He missed a lot of games too. So since him and Al Horford have been back, they're 3-1. I got no worries.
Yeah, I mean, I just feel like they're still an exquisitely coached team. There's more talent here than I think has been here in Brad Stevens' time. It's not close. Like, his first Boston team wasn't very good at all. They're far better. They're better than they were last year. I mean, Al Horford is – everyone – because, it's like hot take season early in the NBA season when numbers look crazy. And don't forget, the Clippers were better than the Warriors until a couple days ago when the Warriors took the top spot back. That was always cute.
Yeah, that was funny to me. Yeah. What's hilarious to me, real quick aside, man, is that even the smart people we both follow and read, they get swept up in things, and they and like, I'm like, dude, I read what you said 3 months ago. You know, that was nice. That was logical, reasonable analysis. And even back then, everyone says the same thing. Hey, don't let the beginning of the season fool you. Everyone said the same thing.
Yeah.
Don't let the first, you know, 2 weeks, the first month fool you. And everybody's being fooled by the first month. I don't get it.
I mean, there were people who were ready to give up on the Warriors after opening night.
I mean, yeah, people. I've already heard the talk of maybe this Warriors team isn't as we thought. I mean, dude,
maybe Kevin Durant wasn't worth it. They lost Andrew Bogut and Harrison Barnes and Mo Spates.
I haven't heard that one. I just know that people are saying these guys look beatable. Dude, it's not even December yet.
They looked beatable after a week when they were still learning how to play with each other. But I mean, that just comes with that's like everyone looks at the Miami Heat team that went like what 9-8 at first, I think. Like yeah, that'll happen. I'm tired.
Even Cleveland, wasn't Cleveland like 10-10 or 15-15? Yeah, they had at one point?
I think like someone took them to like bowling or to the movies, and they had a moment, and then they bonded. Whatever. Yeah, it just happens. It's hard for superstars to learn how to play together, but when you have guys like LeBron or KD or Steph, who these guys are willing to work with other players for the team, they'll figure it out eventually, and they did. They're so good.
Man, and even they're not even hitting on all cylinders yet. And what are they? They have the best record in the league.
Yep, I think they're 15-2.
Yeah, whatever, dude. As the season goes on, they're gonna find a defender for the middle. They're all gonna get like KD had 6 blocks the other night with no Dre. You know, I mean, it's ridiculous, dude. You got players of that caliber. I still say hands down they're gonna represent the West without a major injury to Steph or KD. They're gonna represent the West in the finals. So it doesn't really matter. It's fun to watch though. It is fun to watch.
Yeah, I don't have a problem with it at all.
No, I'm talking about like the Clippers and the talk. It's fun.
Oh, yeah, what, yeah, yeah.
But,
I mean, KD, I wrote this the other day. KD's still my MVP pick. I think he's probably the best player in basketball right now. And I love LeBron, but, I mean, just the things Kevin Durant can do, I don't think anyone else can do.
The way he's playing at this very moment, yes. I would say that no one is playing better than him right now, and I can't disagree with you. I just know that just knowing that what LeBron can do when it comes down to it, that makes him the best player in the league, because I still haven't – KD, we know he can play great in the clutch. His last couple of playoffs haven't been that great at the end. So, but we know LeBron James has totally mastered the mental side of the game in a way that Kevin Durant hasn't yet. So, and that matters.
Yeah, I think KD's fine with – I think LeBron's fine with KD winning MVP as long as LeBron keeps getting finals MVP. I think he'll make that trade. So let's go to two teams who won't win a title this year. Hold on.
Give me 2 more minutes. We got to praise Boston some more.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I'm sorry. We're still on Boston. Yeah, what am I thinking?
We weren't done doing that.
Let's do it.
So my man Al Horford came back from that concussion, and he's averaging about 17 points a game, 8 rebounds, almost 6 assists, 3 blocks, and a steal. I mean, he's shooting 40% from 3, 51% from the floor. And they're 3-1. They've beaten they haven't beaten anybody really, and they lost to San Antonio by 6. But the point is, the guy can do it all. He is the all around game all star. So Isaiah Thomas, like I said, he's averaging 25 games since Al's been back. You know, he's in that negative. And Avery Bradley, we got to give Avery Bradley a shout out. The guy's been rebounding like a madman. Since Al came back, it's dropped down a little bit. He's averaging
8 per game.
Anyway, that's for the season. Since Al came back, he's down to about 6.
Still, that's a lot for him.
Yeah, he's having 17 points and 6 rebounds a game. I mean, he's still shooting, you know, his 3-point shooting's cooled off a lot, which we expected, right? Crowder came back, same thing. Crowder's been excellent, filling in the cracks. He's averaging about 12-4 a game. He's hitting threes. I mean, the team is just deep and versatile. I have no worries about Boston at all.
Here's what I wanted to ask you about the Celtics.
Shoot.
Is this team still looking to add another star player?
Yes.
Do you have any who do you think is a real target? Because obviously there's guys we talked about, like John Wall could – I wouldn't say John Wall's available right now, but there's a chance he ends up available. Boogie Cousins, I don't think they want to trade him. but he's always talked about. Like, who does this team really go for?
Boogie's going to go, I think. Mind Boogie that much, even though he's not my – he's down the list of my choices. And I think Danny Ainge might kick himself in the rear for the next few years. If this team, for some reason, you know, ends up never coalescing and getting that other piece, the fact that Jimmy Butler was available and would cost a lot for him.
Oh, man.
Think about that. The fact that Butler – that like, you know, it was a rumor, but it was a bit, I guess it would have been, what, the number three pick, Crowder, whoever else. I mean, it was a rumor, but I mean, from what I understood, Ainge didn't want to make those kind of moves. That he's gonna kick himself because Jimmy Butler is a legit top, playing like a top five player right now. So, who would I want? I can hope that Paul George gets disgruntled.
That'd be something.
I can hope he gets disgruntled, which he seems like he's going. I can hope that continues. That's pretty much. I can think of right now. You got any ideas?
I'm thinking about it. It's tough. Like, I feel like there's no one super obvious right now. But I think the thing about it is, and I made fun of Boston people the other week, and it was like every time, you know, Boston fans think every player is on the verge of getting traded to Boston, which is, you know, a funny sort of thing that's been around the team because age is always trying to trade for someone. But, like, there's a little truth to it in that still – nobody has assets like Boston. And I think we've all calmed down on maybe the Nets picks aren't worth that much talk after the Nets like won a game early and then almost won a couple other games. They're not good. They're not ready. They don't have real players. I mean, come on. They're fun. They're doing the right things. Don't get me wrong. I'm not trying to bash Brooklyn, but those picks are valuable. They're very valuable. There's two more of them coming. There's a pick swap, so the Nets pick, and then another unprotected pick. So yeah, they'll have two Nets picks they can deal, plus a lot of young players. I think the underrated thing about how Boston can make a move is that, like, they could probably, there's probably teams falling in love with some of these random young players on the bench here.
I think the problem with Boston is that besides Al Horford and Isaiah, and you know, he made All-Star team. He's an All-Star.
Yeah.
Besides those two, everyone else are valuable, quality, but flawed role players. And so they mean a lot to Boston, having them as a collective. Individually, I don't think there's worth as much as people seem would to other teams, not worth as much as Boston would want them to be worth. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So we'd have to really put together a package of picks and players to get what we want. The problem there would be, I mean, do you gut the team for that one player? Would it be, you know, two steps forward, two steps back, two steps forward, one and a half steps back? Would it really make a difference if you got to move all your assets for one player?
I mean, if you look at what the Warriors did, sometimes it can certainly be worth it.
Well, they're adding an MVP to an already 7-3 team. That's a different thing. This is a slightly better than average team, or, you know, better than average team. Would it? The move you think would want to put you into the upper echelon or at least close to it. And I don't know if they sacrifice so much of the talent they have right now for that move, if it really would do that. Because honestly, let's be real. Boston's not a contender right now. They're not. They're really good. But we've seen what LeBron does in the playoffs. We've seen what Toronto's battle tested. I think I'd take Toronto over Boston right this very second. Oh, it's tough, man. It's tough. And it'll be interesting to see, I guess.
Yeah, I mean – this is one that just won't happen because the team just can't do it, and they've actually had a pulse lately. But Anthony Davis would sure be a blast on the Celtics.
The reason that would never happen also is because he's on the contract for so much longer. They don't care.
Yeah, right? he'd have to want to go to Boston to end up in Boston.
And even so, I'm telling you, he goes to the front office and says, "Hey, trade me." They're like, "Dude, you're on the contract to like 2020. I don't want to be here." You're like, "I'm sorry, we're going to, you know, give us, sorry, bro, wait till this summer and we'll work it out."
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I can't.
Well,
everything
he said is, you know, he wants to win there. Like, he doesn't seem like he wants to leave, and which is, you know, admirable for him. I don't know if it's the best career move, but I don't think he's ever really available just because, like you said, he's under contract for forever. Right. He doesn't seem to want to leave, and they certainly, the Pelicans, if the Pelicans traded Anthony Davis against his will, I think the team would, like, fold. I don't know if anyone would go to games. I don't know why they would go to games. That'd be the worst decision I've seen a basketball team make since Orlando refused to pay Shaq back in the day.
Yeah, he's not going anywhere.
No. You mentioned the Raptors. That's one of the two teams we have left. This one might not take too long because I feel like this is something I've seen a lot of people talk about, and it really does boil down to DeMar DeRozan's unstoppable. He's making everything. He's making 50% of his shots from two, 30 points per game. They're, what are they, like 11-3 when he scores 30 or more, which he's done that 14 times already this season.
Au contraire, mon frere. So.
Oh, you don't like DeRozan?
I like him fine, but let's pump the brakes a little bit because so DeRozan started off red hot. He was destroying the world. Let's even see. I'll give you a number here in a second. What DeRozan was doing?
Okay.
So through the first nine games, our man DeRozan was averaging 34 points a game, shooting 53% from the floor. He was even he's dishing and rebounded too. Five rebounds. About three assists a game. Not bad at all. And he was overall, this is compelling radio. Listen to me. He was a plus, almost plus four a game, right? Which isn't the greatest, but he was another of those guys for the last three or four seasons. He's been a net negative overall, right? Well, players usually crash back down to earth. And in the last seven games, right now, I think they're 3-4. In the last seven games, which is not their fault, though. They played Cleveland and Golden State. That really kind of – and they played the Clippers, right? The three great teams. They lost all of them. It happened. But for him, DeRozan's averaging 25 points a game, which isn't bad at all. But his shooting is down to 43%. And those crazy shots he was hitting, up until the last game, he hadn't been hitting them. Last game, he won the game with the Milwaukee. He closed
yeah,
the door.
Yeah, he was fantastic in that one, yeah.
And he's still great, but this my point is, I mean, overall these last seven games he's a net negative 4.3. So I think he's returning back to earth. Somebody who shoots that many mid range jump shots, I couldn't imagine him keep beating up around the mid 50% and 60% mark, which what he was hitting early. He's falling back down to earth a lot, and it's gonna be interesting to see. I mean, look, they're 3-4 in their last seven games for a reason. Now what do they do? Where do they go now? Well, I'm interested to see.
No, yeah, I don't think we disagree. I'm not saying that they're gonna win 60 games on the strength of
for sure.
DeMar DeRozan 16 footers. I just that's been their story thus far. Yeah,
it has, and it was completely awesome. It was amazing to see. He deserved every bit of the props he was getting, and he's even now. Again, this is my point of volume scorers have a place in the league. Even if he keeps doing what he's doing right now, you know, not the most efficient, but he's still scoring 25 a game. That matters. Being able to pencil in, all right, we get 25 a game from DeRozan. The rest of us have to generate, 105 points, and we're good. That matters. So it's just interesting because him, Chris Paul, they both fallen off some, and not fallen off, they're regressing back to the mean.
Yeah.
And people don't really talk about it. But yeah, Chris Paul's been down a little bit too the last six, seven games, and it happened. So it's interesting to watch these teams go through these stages, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing with the Raptors is, DeRozan and Lowry are going to be really good. The questions are going to be, are they going to stay good in the playoffs, which last year they didn't. Neither of them were that good. The other question for me is, who else is going to step up? Are we going to see Valanciunas take this leap that people have talked about him taking for the last 3 years?
Yeah.
Is Terrence Ross a real player? Is Damari Carroll ever going to be the same? And I love Damari Carroll, but he's, scoring under 10 points per game. He's been good but not great from three-point range, shooting 35%. Corey Joseph, everyone says the ideal backup point guard. His numbers are, again, they're good, but they're not fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, I think Patrick Patterson's good. I don't know. Here's the weirdest thing about the Raptors for me, and it's like I like a lot of their players. I'm just not sure that any of them are good enough. I don't know if they're good enough to be third bananas. Like, I think they have a fine top two, but, like, I don't know if Valanciunas is good enough to be third. And none of these other guys are, for sure. The weird thing to me is, how has Pascal Siakam started every game this year for these guys? I like Pascal Siakam. I was high on him. I thought he was more of a small center than a big power forward. But this guy started 16 games so far.
Well, it's all about because Jared Sullinger got hurt, right?
Yeah.
Sullinger was tabbed to be the starter, and he's hurt, which I think is the best thing that could have happened to them because Sullinger is not good. And again, I think Toronto has the same issue that Boston has right now. Sure, the top two players. Fine. That's a good, nice little core, right? Boston has Isaiah and Horford, and these guys have DeRozan and Kyle Lowry, and that they're a great engine. But Jonas, Valanciunas, he's a good player. Is he a third banana? No, he's not. Same thing with Terrence Ross. He's a fine, you know, just a fine role player, rotation player. Is he a second? No, he's not. So that's why I think, I mean, Cleveland has a cakewalk to the finals, because no one can deal with the firepower of a Kevin Love, Kyrie, and LeBron James. They just can't. And Tristan Thompson would be the equivalent to the third best player on Toronto. You know what I'm saying? And he's the fourth best player. And if he was playing the way he plays in Boston, he'd be their third best player. He's just relegated to the fourth best, and that's his perfect role in Cleveland. That's why it's so tough to take anybody over Cleveland, or even giving Cleveland a real run right now.
How fun would this team be if they were the ones who swung the Boogie trade? Valanciunas draft picks up the Yang. I don't know. I don't think they could do it. But if they found a way, how, without giving up DeRozan or Lowry?
And that's why they can't, right? They just don't have the assets.
I don't think they have all their own picks. Valanciunas is nice, but he's not worth that much, especially when the Kings already have six centers or whatever.
Have eight centers already on the roster.
They can't do it, but I think this would be. I don't know if any team in the league benefits as much from getting him. Like, Boston already has a guy who can play center in Horford, but like
imagine moving Horford to power forward and you get Boogie in there with the coaching of Brad Stevens. I think
they'd get better. I just think the Raptors would get way better.
Well, I guess we'll have to.
We can agree to disagree on that.
You can agree to be wrong, and I'll stay right. That's fine.
Okay. The nicest guy I follow chiming in.
That was very nice what I said. I said it very politely.
Let's talk about the Hornets. Let's talk about the Hornets real quick before I take any more digs here. Do you like the Hornets? I feel like I always start off not liking the Hornets because they never do anything too exciting in the summer. And then you watch them play, and they do really well, and they never turn the ball over. And Kemba Walker's really good, and like I think they're fun, but it's again, they certainly don't have the firepower to compete with anyone.
They don't have the it factor that we want teams to have, and that kind of kills them, right? Because they're a collection of really good, not great players. They're almost like the Celtics of last year without Al Horford, right? A lot. Not great players led by I think Kemba's playing like an all-star. He's awesome right now. But, you know, he's still not one of the upper echelon players. And then after that, it's, you know, Batum, and MKG is a great defender who can win games, helps you win games. But do I like them? I like Kemba Walker, and I like the scrap they show. So I'm going to say yes, tentatively, because they beat the Knicks the other day. I like that. It makes me laugh.
I mean, it's again, it's like they're going to be fun. I like your Celtics comparison. I was going to say they're like the fourth best Spurs imitator, but I don't know if they really are that. They're just a team with a lot of guys, none of whom are overwhelmingly good, although Kemba's getting there. Kemba's fantastic this year.
He is. I'm looking at their schedule right now. So look at their wins. They beat Miami, which I don't think Miami's a good team. They beat Milwaukee.
They're bad.
Yeah, Milwaukee is showing signs of life now, but that was their first win of the season. They beat Milwaukee, and without Chris Middleton, I already said that Milwaukee's not making the playoffs.
Yeah,
they beat the Sixers, they beat Brooklyn, they beat the Pacers, and now that was a good win because but even so, the Pacers haven't been good this year. They beat the Jazz. I don't know who was missing from the Jazz, but that's a good win, all right?
Yeah.
Then they beat Minnesota. Okay, everyone beats Minnesota right now, and they beat the Hawks. That's another good win. Other than that, they've lost to Toronto, Cleveland, Boston. New Orleans beat them. Memphis beat them. The Spurs beat them. So Charlotte's good, and I almost want to say it's like a 3 yards in a cloud of dust offense. They scrap, and they'll beat you up a little bit, and they're physical. They're deep. They play well.
It's one of those where it's like there's a lot of these teams in sort of just this middle tier where they know they're not going to win the title. But like, there's no reason to give up. There's nothing they can do to become championship teams next year. They have to just do the best they can with what they have and build a system. And sometimes you get lucky. I mean, honestly,
like that was my big thing, man. It took me a while to realize that because I was hard on Memphis for a lot of years. Where I'm like, you're gonna be a second round out. What are you doing? But it means something to the franchise, right? It means something to the fan base. And, I mean, there's nothing wrong with being a very good team in the NBA. Everyone can't be a champion, right?
Yeah. And, I mean, especially for, like, it depends from franchise to franchise. Like, you can't do that if you're the Lakers or the Celtics. Like, those teams have history. They have fan bases expecting something. But if you're, you know, the Pelicans, the Grizzlies, the Hornets, a fairly young team, the Raptors to a certain extent, the Raptors are thrilled with what they've been able to do. They obviously want more. They're not complacent. But like, it's hard to be upset with a team like that when before that you had virtual nothingness. The Bucks too are. The Bucks fans are excited about losses this year because like they're exciting and there's a promise at winning eventually. You know, the Bucks have a ring unlike a lot of these other teams, but it came in 71. So
right.
What does that really mean these days? It's interesting. It's another good conversation we'll have to have some other time about like different levels of skill, basically, and why you shouldn't just automatically want to tank if you're not in the top tier.
Of course not. Right. And some teams are building, you know, what they have. Some teams like Sacramento, we don't know what they're doing. Orlando, same thing. It's all about expectations versus reality of who you are. I think Orlando has been delusional as far as their front office last 100%. Couple of years.
You can't force it.
Yeah.
We're going long, and I'm sorry if you have something to do. Just let me know if I'm killing your time right now. The thing that makes me laugh, though, is when people say that the Warriors are an example of what's wrong with the NBA. You know, oh, you need a super team to win and yada, yada, yada. They built this team through draft picks. They drafted Stephen Curry, Klay Thompson, and Draymond Green, and they had all three of those guys for a couple years, and no one thought they were anything worth watching. You know, they went to the playoffs, and they were the scrappy young team, like, I don't know, like Boston was last year, let's say, or whoever. You know, the Trailblazers were a team that could have been like this. I don't think they had a particularly good offseason. But, like, that's what people thought about the Warriors. It was like, you know, oh, they went, they're the first year they went, and, like, they think they lost, and they won a playoff series or something like that. And everyone was like, oh, I mean, they're kind of fun. And then all of a sudden, they won 67 games in the title. And then they won 73 games and lost the title, and then they added Kevin Durant. Like, it's not like they just, you know, they didn't pull a Knicks and just sign four guys and trade for another guy. Like, they built that, and then they were so good, and their front office was so smart to sign Stephen Curry to a cheap deal that they could afford to get Kevin Durant. Like, that's not what's wrong with the NBA. That's how the NBA should work. They earned that. And there's luck. Of course there's luck. But, like, they built that out of, you know, one high draft pick. I think Klay was, like, 10th overall. Steph was, like,
Seven?
Yeah.
I think Steph was seven. Klay was 9 or 10. Dre was, what, 30, second round?
34, 35, something like that. I mean, that's a good NBA story for some of these teams right now who are at the mid-tier. Like, you can make it up if your players develop, right?
Well, it takes a lot of luck, too, right?
It does.
The Steph ankle injury got them. He signed for cheap because he wanted long-term security. And at the time, it wasn't even that cheap. $12 million at the time was a lot of money for him.
Yeah. But even if you don't factor in adding Kevin Durant, like, still, I mean, they still won a title without him. They went to another one without him. You'd imagine if they kept what they had and didn't get him, they'd still be pretty damn good this year. Like, it can happen.
Yeah, for sure. But it's like, it took a confluence of a perfect storm of things for Golden State to be where they are right now. And then look at a team like OKC. They had these great draft picks, and they had their rise for a few years, and now it's Russell Westbrook standing by himself with Steven Adams.
I think that really I think that speaks to how important culture and coaching is.
It does, definitely. And how much luck matters, right?
Yeah, that too. KD
broke a foot and missed a season. Russ got hurt in the playoffs, you know, that year. I think that they were like favored that year to get to the finals again. Yeah. Russ hurt his knee. Ibaka hurt his knee the next year in the playoffs and missed two games against the Spurs. All that matters, man. It really matters. And that story in OKC could be totally different with just one or two different bounces.
Yeah, it's the NBA. The little things matter. The little things definitely matter because it's like now, you know, the Warriors don't have a center and it doesn't matter. Well, that's because a million other little things went right to this point, giving them four generational players.
That's insane, dude.
It is, but it's possible. Don't lose faith, Hornets of the world. You never know what could happen.
I'm going to say it differently, Hornets fans of the world. Lose faith. Lose faith.
Trade all your players to Boston. Just get it over with. Take these Nets picks. Just, give us Kemba Walker.
Just enjoy your time on the treadmill because, like, right now, it's the only place you're going to be.
On that optimistic note, let's do our plugs quick and get out of here. Tell people where they can find you, what you're up to, what you enjoy in your spare time. Let's hear it.
I like long walks on the beach and eating clams out of burritos.
That's exactly what I was looking for. Good.
Check me out on bballbreakdown.com, pressbasketball.com, where I'm part of my own podcast team. And I'm going to tell my guy to get you on. Phil, we're going to have my boy on one day, right?
Yes, good. I love going on podcasts. I don't have to edit them. It's great.
That's the best part about it, right? The Away Team podcast over on at pressbasketball.com. And I'm also guest appearing every now and then on blazersedge.com. And you can just find me on twitter.com at jholishoops. And come talk basketball with me. And that's about it.
Absolutely. Go talk basketball with him. Talk basketball with me at Ty Windish. I think I have one millionth of the followers James does, but I'm still out here repping. What are my other plugs? Timeoutwithty.com. You can find every episode on every platform, plus the links to merch and stuff like that. Don't forget the contest. Enter. Tweet at me. Picture of you listening to your favorite episode. It can be this one, but don't suck up to James too much. it all goes to his head. And then with the hashtag TWTVibes, stands for Time Out with Ty Vibes. And then you can be entered to win a shirt. Check out all the episodes. Check out my stuff at BehindTheBuckPass.com. And I'm back at HoopsHabit.com, rooting the internet with reason takes. One last one. Shout out to Joy Burbs. I almost forgot. He's going to be super mad at me. He does the intro and outro music to this podcast. Multiple-time guest. Future multiple-time Grammy winner, Joey Burbs. Check his stuff out at joeyburbs.com and at Twitter, at Joey Burbs. My list is getting long, but James, thank you so much for coming on. This was a great episode talking about the Eastern Conference.
My man, I appreciate it, man. I would love, but I better be on again before the season's over. That's all I know.
At least twice. I'll say that.
Yes, I'm in there.
Sounds good. I'll talk to you soon, my dude.
All right, Doc.